Do you have more pictures of your goats than yourself on your phone? Does your vacation time get spent attending goat shows? Can you have a conversation without bringing up dairy goats? Neither can we. So join us as we talk to the country's best breeders, judges, appraisers, and industry experts about all things dairy goats. We are John Kane and Danielle Caroli. Welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. Are you busy preparing for kidding season? Take the stress out of meals by getting delicious Grey Goat BBQ sauces and seasonings to elevate any meal. These products make great gifts for Valentine's Day. Do you want to taste product made from goats in the same herd as the Grey Goat herself? Try out rich, creamy, and decadent goat milk fudge made from the girls at Utterly Wicked Farms. Get some sweets and treats for your sweetie at greygoatbbq.com. If you use the code RINGSIDE10, you'll get 10% off of your order today. So again, that's RINGSIDE10 to receive 10% off at checkout. Thank you to the Grey Goat for sponsoring this episode of Ringside. This episode of Ringside is sponsored by Thistlemore Pottery. Are you looking for gifts for the winners or judges at your upcoming shows? Thistlemore Pottery would love to work with you to create pottery with your show's or farm's logo on it. They're happy to make your pottery ideas come to fruition. Keep in mind, the ceramic process can take some time, a minimum of 6 weeks for custom orders. So be sure to get your orders in today. Handmade mugs make your morning coffee taste that much better. Check out the Thistlemore Etsy store to purchase pottery in stock alongside goat milk soaps made from the milk of the Thistlemore dairy goats themselves. For free shipping, enter code RINGSIDE. Go to thistlemorepottery.com today. Link in the show description. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside. I'm John, and as always, I'm joined by the floppy-eared queen herself, Danielle Caroli. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Doing pretty well, trying to knock out some projects before the cold weather hits us again. So that's what my last couple days has been filled with. Tomorrow, I'll finish cleaning out one of the stalls in the barn that's a little bit overdue, and just pack it nice and fluffy for them because, yeah, we're going to be getting right down into that winter weather that I brought on ourselves, I guess.
Yeah, thanks again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I made the mistake, not the mistake, my animals will thank me for it, but made the mistake of looking at the upcoming weather forecast and realize that, oops, we're going to have to rebed those pens with more straw. We're going to have to start bringing our bucks back into the barn at night because the next couple of days are going to get pretty cold here in New York. But
yeah,
I guess we've made it to February, so we really shouldn't be complaining too much.
Yeah, the countdown for kidding season for my herd has begun. You're not too far behind me, so it's getting real. It's getting real. Life with dairy goats, right?
It really is.
Well, speaking of life with dairy goats, let's just kind of touch on some ag news, and then we have a really exciting guest today. So let's power through this, and we'll get going.
All right. So one thing in terms of ag news that I just wanted to kind of put a reminder out there for is there is a Facebook page online for the ABGA Executive Committee, and it's a great resource when there is NG system maintenance or different things happening. They're really working to keep that up to date with kind of the nitty gritty of the organization. So if you're having issues, you can't log in, different things are going on, be sure to just check that page out. And even if you don't have Facebook, a simple Google search will put you right there and will pop up that information. So just a reminder, it's a good resource to utilize if you are having NG difficulties.
Agreed. And also, ballots are due February 13th for national show judges. Also, creating the wording for the position of executive director if the membership decides to go that route within our guidebook. And also, the change to allow online voting is also due February 13th. So make sure you get those mailed back, have your voice heard, and we can move forward as a registry and look forward to 2023 and beyond.
Exactly.
Well, Daniel, I mentioned we have a couple really exciting guests on today. Who do we have joining us?
Before we really introduce this guest, I want to kind of talk about all of a sudden we're in the ring and we see this La Mancha doe. She's gorgeous. She has a beautiful, productive mammary system. She has a gorgeous shape, lots of substance of bone. I could go on and I can go on. And if I were to tell you, oh, she's black with red trim, you could probably guess what herd she comes from or what herd you would find in her pedigree. You can definitely tell she's a Lucky Star animal. In addition to that telltale coloring, the Lucky Star herd has been building an impressive herd of dairy goats for years. With over 40 years of breeding and raising La Manchas, they have received many national awards, including 2 national grand champions, a reserve national champion, and have been the premier La Mancha breeder twice on that national level. In addition to their national wins, they have had many, many permanent champions and over 45 different top 10 does. But not only have they had all that success, but they have also done what is probably one of the ultimate goals of dairy goat breeders, and that is creating a herd that is distinguishable by their own individual type. Today, we are sitting down with Judy and Don Hoy to talk about all that went into creating that unique style that we know as Lucky Star. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, John and Dale, for having us on. We appreciate being asked. And as you quickly found out when John wrote to me that we're a dynamic duo. We do everything together, and we've done the dairy goats together for over 45 years. So it's not just my hobby that Don joined in or Don's hobby that I joined in. It's been a team effort from the day we picked up the very first dairy goat in our car together.
That's how many farms are successful, is by working together as a team, wouldn't you say?
I think it has helped a lot.
Well, to start off, can you introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about your herd and your history for the listeners?
We started Lucky Star Farm probably, well, over 45 years ago, and we've been on continuous DHIA tests for the majority of that time. We did classification back in the old days and appraisal currently, basically whenever it was available. We initially got our first goat when we lived in Northern California, up in the Arcata, a little north of Arcata area. And that was in the late 70s. So, and then we moved our herd to Port Angeles, Washington, its current location, which is basically the furthest northwest corner of the United States, of the continental United States. We are way out here. But anyway, we moved there in the mid 80s, or actually early 80s. Both Judy and I have had over time very consuming full-time careers off the farm, and we've raised 2 sons here. We're 2 very goal-driven individuals, and we've both been CFOs of significant size companies, and that type of behavior is reflected in our La Mancha herd management. In the early years, in the beginnings, we had a few alpines and grades, and we won a La Mancha in a raffle at the local goat club in Eureka, California, where there was a goat club. And that basically changed the direction of our herd.
And a little note, every single goat and La Mancha in our barn today is related to that raffle win.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was not a case of, well, we took that raffle win home. We were fortunate that she obviously carried some good genes, and we were able to locate some semen because the only La Mancha in the area was her sire within several hours of us. and we took a class and learned to AI. We bought the only La Mancha semen in the instructor's tank, which happened to be from Little Orchard. And the first Lucky Star La Mancha was a result of that. She ultimately became a permanent champion. She was appraised 90, or classified, I think eventually appraised to 90. She lived a long time. And her highest placing at nationals was second as an age doe. And her name was Rosa Maria. And we just announced the other day the birth of the first kid this year, who is Revival. Revival is the start of ours for the third time.
Wow. Oh my gosh. That is impressive.
Yeah.
So we've been through the alphabet two full times, and Revival is 11th generation directly from that Raffle Doe and her daughter.
Wow.
The Doe line. So it's what I like. I mean, we had this vision, but it started with, you know, we always say it's not called Lucky Star without reason, because we were very lucky that the semen that was available was a Little Orchard buck that was quite successful. We were able to get on our first AI attempt a conception, thanks to Andy and Ida Purcella, who we got the semen from and who we took a class from. And so that sort of started our herd. And then at that same picnic, we were introduced to Mary Keene, for one, of Cypress Chev fame. And she took us under her wing, and we got very involved with production. So we went on production testing. That first goat was production tested from the day she gave birth. And we have stayed on production testing the entire time. And we focused initially, I think, on production because of Mary's influence as much as anything else. And we didn't have a lot of local shows. And of course, classification didn't exist yet, and certainly not appraisal. And so production was kind of the benchmark. Don and I, as I think Don already alluded to, we're very goal driven. So we have to have goals. You know, what are we trying to do with this? Why are we doing this? and production became, you know, the first thing. And I think it took us to T. She was an R. We do everything by the alphabet around here. So the R goat was Rosa. It took us to the T goat, who was actually a half-sister of Rosa, to get a top 10 milker in the La Mancha breed. So that was only a few years later. And we have pretty much every year since then had at least one or two or more, sometimes top 10 milkers. Occasionally we miss out ourselves, but there's always at least some daughters of bucks that we've produced on the top 10 list.
So, or somebody else owns a Lucky Star goat that makes the top 10.
Yeah, that's right. Happened too. So that was that was kind of where our initial, you know, sort of push came from. And right away, we sort of started writing down goals. What do we want to do? What do we like? What don't we like? Our facilities sometimes dictated goals. Like one of our goals is to have plum teats. And that's because when we milk by machine, we milk from behind. And so we found out that it was much easier to milk from behind if does had plumber teats and you didn't have to use two hands to get a teat cup on the doe. So, you know, some of our goals and objectives were driven by maintenance and management issues, and others aesthetics. So
I want to kind of back up a second, because we've started talking about some of these things, but I just want the listeners who are not familiar, and probably even the listeners who are more familiar with your herd, to realize some things. As we were doing our research for this podcast, I started doing a little digging on ADGA genetics. Obviously, not taking into account anything past 2020, while still adding animals that you registered in, we were able to run numbers, and over 15% of your herd has either a SGCH, an SG, a GCH, or a CH attached to that herd name. While you can certainly say that luck had something to do with creating these amazing animals, there's also this lucky star stamp. When you look at La Mancha's, you clearly see an animal that's a lucky star animal. So what would you say is, in terms of that general idea of what a lucky star animal is, what would you say is how you would describe that animal?
I don't know if 15% is high or low. Is that, I mean, I never looked at that.
Is well, that a high I think, percent? I was thinking it's kind of high because you figure that, first of all, you have animals that you register that don't necessarily continue on and get shown. I mean, there was over 1,700 animals registered in your herd name. And I feel that's a pretty high number because if you register animals that maybe don't make it to kitting and pass on progeny, or animals that you sell that don't necessarily go into homes that are showcasing them in the same ways, I thought it was a pretty impressive feat. I don't know.
Don's not the number. He is an accountant too, but he's does a different thing than me. And I'm really number driven. And we've had 2,120 kids born here. And of those, obviously, about 1,700, if you pick up Lucky Star before the asterisk got added, and after the asterisk got added. And so 1,700 of the 2,120 got registered. But realizing what you said is important to me, that a lot, we, especially in our first 20 years, a lot of our animals went to commercial herds where they were unregistered, or not, you know, the registration didn't get pursued and they were not on test. Plus, we actually export to Russia, the Philippines, I mean, all over the place, actually, a lot of foreign countries. And their records also do not get into the ADGA records. And given we're right on the Canadian border, we used to be able to, animals used to cross the border more fluidly early on. And so those didn't always get cross-registered into ADGA. So I personally think the 15%, while it's a good number, I think the reality is it probably is really higher that have achieved those goals, just because some of them, I mean, we've had Canadian national champions as well. So that's sort of my, but it's not, production was the push. And early on, we didn't keep dry yearlings, and we wanted yearling milkers who could produce 2,000 pounds of milk, which was not typical of a La Mancha in those days. That was really what initially drove our goal, I mean, drove our, what we kept and what we sold, mostly, you know, what we kept after they freshened. The Lucky Star, though, you see today comes from a different process. And there's a story that goes with that, of course.
Judy, I think you should tell that story. It starts over 20 years ago.
Actually, year 2000.
Year 2000, yeah.
We had what we considered a beautiful dairy herd. You know, we thought they were really special. They were permanent champions. They appraised 90, but they were four individual does that were beautiful, not a dairy herd. One was a tricolor doe, one a chocolate pinto, one actually a black and tan, one a red. And we walked them in the ring. Now, kind of imagine the Northwest, where you have Desrugistel, Tempo, you know, I mean, the quality of the herds in the Northwest is amazing. And we used to have to walk in the ring with all these national champion, first place dairy herds and compete. Well, there's no way we could compete with the Sonnens and the Togs. And we have this beautiful mahogany Nubian herd. Even the Alpines, darn it, were this uniform couture look.
Well, and Clissa's grades, so yeah, the precursor.
Yeah,
to-
we always, yeah, Clissa's grades. We did. There weren't sables at that point, but even the grades were really sable sonnets, and right. they were uniform.
Yeah.
And so here we walk in with this, you know, four pretty does, but I looked around the ring and I went, "We're never going to compete for this award until our breed looks like a uniform dairy herd." Mm-hmm. And that was in 2000 at State Fair. And we came home and we said, "So what are we going to do?" And I said, "Well, let's list all our favorite La Manches." And we did. There was a Brookwood Doe from Pete Snyder named Yolanda, a national champion named Zeba, Barbara Backus's Shyla, our own Crystal. And we figured out that we listed 12 and 10 of our favorites were black and tans. Huh. So maybe there was something to this color. And we decided, okay, so let's see if we can't breed for that color pattern. And maybe we'll get more of these does at our own house that we like so much. So I started collecting sales lists and writing. We didn't, you know, I hate to say the internet wasn't quite as
it wasn't as robust as it is now. That's for sure.
I collected, you know, literally hundreds of sales lists. I called people, I wrote letters, I asked for pictures. You know, there is no database for color.
No, there's not.
That's very
and
true.
So it's, you know, if you breed a color breed, you know, you kind of got it in spades. At least you can assume so or hope so. But in La Manches, we're allowed, and we're grateful for that. Every breeder gets to do their own thing when it comes to color. So trying to write to everybody, and of course, there were people who were suspicious I was up to something, but mostly I wanted a four goats that not only produced top 10 milk records, but looked alike. We collected all this data and we started breeding. We made a point of only buying black and tan bucks, which, much to the delight of some of our fellow breeders, they would always chuckle when we'd call an order and, you know, and they go, "Well, we know what you're going to ask next." And I was accused by one of my favorite herd breeders. When we put the order in, they said to us, "We've never had a black and tan born here." And I said, "Well, I've done all my homework, and I really think that you could get a black and tan buck out of this breeding." And 5 months later, this was Martha Greiner and Bill Greiner. I'll tell on them. And Martha called us up and she said she thought maybe I was a witch. Joking and laughing. And I and we're all laughing, and I said, "Oh, you got a black and tan buck, didn't you?"
And then
they laughed, and they said, "We got a black and tan buck and a black and tan doe." And the second doe was more traditional of the colors they had had to that point in the herd. You had asked, and we'll get to that later, but Thrill came to live with us. Because we were obviously thrilled we got this breeding, and we really wanted that because of the production and everything that was going on there. And he came here and became part of this, my obsession with getting black and tan. Well, it took, and I want to keep emphasizing this for listeners, you know, this is a lot of time has passed here, and we weren't going to give up all those original goats. We didn't go out and buy any doe stock. We started with what we had. It took until 2012. In 2012, we walked in the show ring at, once again, State Fair with a dairy herd that still chokes us up when we think about it. Three of the does at that time were top 10. The fourth doe in the dairy herd was only a two-year-old. And Tim Flickinger keeps a picture of this on his wall because he couldn't understand why we were all so excited when this happened. And he picked that dairy herd best in show. And so our 12-year-long goal was finally was finally mint, and they were all black and tans. We were just really pleased. And so that now is those four does and their descendants really are when I think of Lucky Star type, that really sets the standard. And some of those are well known to people. They all appraised 92, 93, and 94.
Yeah.
And they were all black and tan.
That's cool. So
that's kind of how we got there. But it took patience.
That's something that we preach a lot on this podcast is patience, which a lot of the time people are preaching that to me because I have none. Just ask my wife.
Well, Don says that about me too, but
she wants patience right now.
Yeah, it takes a while.
We had people who really wanted our white kids when they were born. We still have a list of people who like to get our paint kids when we have paint kids, although if they're black and tan, we do occasionally keep some with white markings. We've added other crazy things in the meantime. We try to breed. We have no wattles. We've always had elf ears. You know, we like short hair. We try to breed for short hair. That's been more challenging. And uniformity of teeth size, shape, and placement has been challenging for us. So, you know, we still have, you know, more goals to work on.
Right. Let's talk about those goals really quick. I know we've kind of mentioned them a little bit, but just so that they're there, what are your main goals and objectives? And you talked about the goal to have that dairy herd win. Have there been other goals that you've achieved over those past 45 years? And then what are your current goals? What are we going to be seeing in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from Lucky Star?
Well, we're pretty open. We have a page on our website called Goals and Objectives. We kind of spell it out, and I did look at it to make sure it needs to be updated. A couple places it says 41 years, and it was updated in 2018. But there was really nothing else that we felt we needed to update other than the years we had been working on it. So we were pleased to see that, you know, we review it periodically and still feel that's accurate. And we think it's divided kind of into three parts. We call it the three P's: picture, performance, and preferences. The picture of how the goat looks, you know, we have an eye that is attracted to wedge-shaped goats. If you're looking at them from the back, they should be wider at the back than at the withers. If you're looking at them from the side, they should have a deep rear rib. Both of those relate to production. You got to have enough barrel to consume enough hay to make the kind of milk that we're looking for. And we like the eyes. You know, La Mancha's have kind of some people think a peculiar head with no ears. So we like the eyes to dominate the head. So you don't even, when you look at the doe, the appeal is there, and you don't even notice that they have little ears. You just see this wide forehead and strong muzzle, and you can be attracted to that. You know, so the picture of the goat really hasn't changed a lot. And I think we say things in those goals, like the angle of the rump. We don't want a perfect 100% flat rump because we think that is not quite as impedes kidding somewhat. And so we like a little bit of slope to the rump. I mean, we kind of spell those out. Then performance expectations is the second P. And there I stole the word performance from ADGA's performance programs. And in that area, we are looking at which we think that ADGA performance programs are really important. I think we've been appraised 30 times appraised and classified.
Yeah.
I mean, we really have done it whenever it's been available. And we've been appraised by more than a dozen different appraisers. I think almost anybody, except some of the newer people, have appraised the herd. So we've had a lot of variety of input. And we think that program is really been useful for us. Appraisal, for example, when we started, does that appraised 80, we didn't keep. So,
but 81 we did.
Yeah, but 81 we did. And we worked with, you know, those animals and, you know, worked them up in our herd. And eventually now you have to be 90 or better to stay. So that's, you know, we've made some progress with the consistency of appraisal, thanks to the programs that ADGA has provided us. And then our production expectations now, and again, we owe it to the local DHIA people from Washington State, and we owe it to ADGA for doing all these records and working to make all the information available and public. We'll get back there. But our goal for production is we want a 2,000-pound yearling. I think I mentioned that earlier. We want mature animals to have an ME, a mature equivalent, of 3,000 pounds or more. Now, we have had several animals over the years that have milked well over 4,000 pounds, but we find when we chart and look at our production records that those are, for our breed, are more unusual. And so even though we sometimes get them and we really like them and I'd love to have bucks from that kind of production, we want to make sure our baseline is an ME of at least 3,000. And, you know, and 120 pounds of butter fat, I think is still what we're trying to get at the same point in time. The last one of those goals and objectives is preference. And there are some things that are our preferences, and the color issue that we get
don't
teased
call it
about.
An issue.
We get
I wouldn't
teased.
Call it an issue.
You're a color breeder. Why are you calling it an issue?
We get teased a lot about the black and tan from all breeders of other goats. I mean, of all breeds, and we certainly get teased from the La Mancha people about it. You know, as long as everybody understands that that's just our way of keeping, one of our ways of keeping the herd small. We can have two perfectly beautiful goats, and if one of them's paint and one is all black and red, we're going to keep the black and red one if they're equal quality, because just that gives us a criteria to help keep the herds tiny. And so, but it's a preference, not something that we think is important to the breed particularly or anything like that. We like the variety that all our fellow breeders get to pick and choose what they want. But we also breed for no wattles. We don't have any wattles in our herd, and that's on purpose. We do try and breed for short hair. The breed standard actually calls for a short, sleek coat, although because we all show with them clipped, nobody knows whether your goat has a short, sleek coat. But we do, and we try to, you know, we try to incorporate that into our breeding program. But one of the other things that's real important to us that is ease of management. Feet have to be easy to trim. We already talked about ease of milking. We'd also like
sometimes does. Personality gets in
yeah,
there too.
We like does that are sweet tempered, easy to handle, so that we don't have to, you know, make a squabble. Although every once in a while we get an eccentric one that only likes one or the other of us, and and we occasionally let that by. especially if it's Judy that they like best.
I was going to say, does it favor one or the other?
Yeah.
Well, they all favor, the majority favor Don. You know, he milks them, he feeds them. You know, I do terrible things like drag them in the show ring. load them in a trailer and drag them to a show. Now, we have some that love that.
Yeah.
But the vast majority would, I think, rather stay home with Don and get fed peanuts.
Oh,
treat.
I know what that's like. I have for many years when we would get ready for a show, before the show, we would have the trailer in view of the dough pen ready to pull out. And I would get to my barn way earlier than my goats would see me on a normal day. And they knew the trailer was there, and they knew I was here way before they should be seeing me. And most of those does let it be known that they were not happy that we were going to a show. Any other time, they'd come right out the pen, out the gate. And, you know, by the time we got to the shows too, they would be fine. But some of them, I got my exercise getting them into the trailer before we got out of the barn.
We've had some over the years. Crystal, we laugh that we took Crystal to a show prior, a few months before a national show. The only reason she got to go to the show was that she ran out of the pen, bumped the gate open, and jumped in the trailer, and I couldn't drag her out. And I said, I don't know, she was probably 7 at the time or 8. I said, oh, I'll take her to the show and we'll see what happens. And we took her to the show and she was best in show. And one of the judges, in fact, I think your last week's guest, Jennifer Bice, was the judge. And she said, are you taking her to nationals? And I said, oh, we hadn't thought about it. She's 8 years old. And she said, you know, the way Jennifer does, quite quietly and subtly, suggested you might want to think about it. And so we took her and she was reserve national champion.
That's amazing. That's so she was just like, I need to go. I need to be at the show and strut my stuff. And lo and behold, it was just like, if she didn't barge onto that trailer, Jennifer would have never seen her. And who knows, you might have not have taken her to nationals.
No, we wouldn't have. I mean, we just, you know, I mean, we I don't think we would have at all.
Yeah, we don't take, you know, we go to so few national shows that, you know, we kind of pick and choose what we, you know, do there. So,
yeah, and usually one of us has to stay home and take care of the farm and the other one goes, and it's a lot of work. And, you know, sometimes Don will fly in on national show day, or sometimes I have to fly in on national show day and help show.
This was the day when we were both working. And in some cases, I mean, Judy flew in from, you know, a meeting in New York into a national show from someplace. Another time you did the same thing, flew into Wyoming or something.
I mean, work is, you know, life, real life gets in the way of goats sometimes.
It sure does.
Oh, don't we know it.
But anyway, so that's kind of, you know, the goals. We sit and talk about them together. Should we lower this? Should we raise that? Is it time? And right now we're thinking we're kind of liking right where we are, although we are gradually reducing the numbers. You know, we'll admit openly we're in our 70s now. We're thinking, how long are we going to keep doing this, Lord willing, a long time more, but it still is a challenge. And it's more typical that some health issue might arise with one of us now. And so we have to keep it manageable. But it helps to have goats that are easy to manage and easy to handle and easy to trim the feed and, you know, don't cause a lot of problems. So
as you're working together to attain your goals, I mean, you were saying that for Dairy Herd at Washington State Fair, it took you guys 12 years to achieve that goal. How are you working together to not veer off that path of what your goals are, and what strengths do each of you bring to the team that you have?
Well, we have divided up some of the activities here. Mm-hmm. I do a lot, you know, essentially a lot of the milking, most of the milking. I do the clipping for the shows. So, you know, and when we don't have a zillion kids out there, feed the kids, you know, when it gets crazy, of course, Judy comes to help. But then Judy organizes everything. She gives me a 3x5 card for every Friday morning that says, you know, here's the 6 goats that need shots. Here's the 4 goats that need to come in now for lead feed. Here's who needs worming, et cetera, et cetera. And she has all those cards and little 3x5 cards that she makes up in January for the whole year. So it's quite organized here in terms of what we do and what we, you know, it allows us to be, I mean, that much organization allows you to be efficient, if that makes sense.
Right. No, it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
The other thing we do is we keep pictures of goals in our mind. We have some pictures that we use that actually Melanie Ferguson made about the structure of goats. We have another funny stick drawing that John White did. We have a picture of, I think it's 11 Dos Regis del Tempo Sonnens lined up at a fence, tied up to go in the ring for a Sonnen specialty one day. And I just happened to catch them. I think Lori has actually used that picture on her website or promotional things over the years. But we kept that picture and we keep that in front of us because that's really still the ultimate goal. 4 was nice, but 11 would be even better.
So, right.
And now we have, I sent John a picture of a doe that Don was showing last summer. And we like that doe.
She's it on, was funny because we couldn't figure out who it was for a while. One of this goats is this?
we had to go back to the reel of the film sequence of the pictures in the film and figure out whose goats, who else was in the ring, and
where was the show? Because we went to like 3 shows last year, which is a big deal for us. And I actually went to a show, which, you know, which is pretty unusual.
Yeah, and so we finally figured out who the goat was. But anyway, that's what I want. I love it when we go out and look at the kid pens, and I can't tell who any of the goats are without reading their tattoos. That would be my dream come true, that you have to check the tattoos to tell who the goats are. And now that same goat out in the barn, I have no trouble going out and picking her out. But in a photograph, I had to work through who it was.
We couldn't quite see her muzzle either.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Yeah. You know, so it was funny because it did take us a while. So we also sent it to our best goat buddy is Cindy Silva. Our friendship has been well touted out in the goat world over the years. And I sent the picture to Cindy and said, who is this? And she wrote back and said, are you kidding me? I don't know which one it is.
So I think it would have been impressive if she did. Like, oh, shoot, you know our goats a little better than we do from pictures.
Yeah.
Well, I think I busted her one time and wrote her back and said, no, that's, you got the wrong picture on one of hers. But anyway, we try to keep ourselves honest in what we're looking for by, you know, that Sonnen picture. There's a La Mancha out in the world right now who we have on our wall as well. And we try and keep that picture of that doe in our eyeballs all the time and kind of set our standard. So, and we talk about it. I mean, it was way more fun to talk about goats than accounting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine so.
That was our other common thing was that we have in common is accounting and finance. And
for a while, we were both controllers for the same
conglomerate, different divisions.
And so, you know, we would have, unfortunately, a lot of things to talk about and things we couldn't talk about.
So the goats became the,
you know, our division would sell to her division and we couldn't discuss price. We couldn't, I mean, it got to be kind of funny sometimes.
So we, you know, the goats became our, and it was a great way to raise our sons. And now to have our grandchildren here, although I'm not sure how I feel about an Alpine and 2 Nigerians, but.
Uh-oh. What you yeah. do for grandkids is what I'm hearing right there.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, those two, I can see why Nigerians are so popular. Those two little does have won Don's and my heart with their charm.
It's a slippery road.
Oh, yeah.
They just are. So you know, thank heavens. So we don't have, it doesn't become a, they love the grandkids and they were smart enough to endear themselves to the people who feed them every day.
Mm-hmm. They quickly do that. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the story.
Yeah. So let's kind of go back to those goals and objectives. And one of the things I wanted to touch on is that there's a big objective that your does have to have an E in the mammary system. And yes. So at what age does that doe have to have that E? And is that age based on knowing your lines, or is it knowing what you need that mammary system to look like as a young doe to know she will get an E later on?
Well, we'd like them to get an E as young as possible. Okay. We did have a doe that we like very, very much who may hold a lifetime, still hold a lifetime La Mancha production record of 32,000 pounds. She got a V, or she got, the appraiser assigned her an E, and I went, stop. You're going to have to explain to me why that's an E, because I don't understand. And the appraiser went through it all, and I said, all right, you know, and kind of, and I think at the time I wrote right in our sales list that although we appreciate it, we're not sure she's there yet. The next year, as a six-year-old, she was definitely there.
Yeah.
And we finally took her to a show and at six, and you know, she was best in show in several rings, and she looked like she had an E mammary to us even. But the appraisers are so much more, especially some of our senior appraisers, are so much more skilled at looking at animals and understanding how they're going to develop and evolve. You know, they see thousands and thousands of animals, and almost all of them are skilled breeders on their own part. So I just, Don and I always ask questions and get them to explain to us what they see that we might be missing. But I'll tell you, what we want out of that E mammary is we like to see lots of lateral attachment in the rear. We like to see the teat placement to be plumb, because we think when the legs kick the teats, you're going to get higher somatic cell counts and eventually more susceptibility to mastitis. The same thing with attachments in the fore. You want the udder up off the ground and out of the way of the doe when she walks. Our favorite does walk the same full into the milk room as they do when they walk out of the milk room. And that, or, to us, is an E mammary.
Or even, you know, in my opinion, walking around the show ring when the goat has to waddle around her udder because it's so full, that something's wrong there. I mean, that the structure, the mammary either is too big or the goat isn't big enough. And so, I mean, I want to see a goat that walks smoothly around the ring when her udder's full. And, you know, and if you, you know, go to a show and watch that goat that does that, to me, is superior to one that doesn't. And, you know, that's one of the things
that I agree. Yeah. There's nothing worse than seeing a doe that has a beautiful mammary system, sure, and nice and capacious, but they can't even walk around the darn thing. It looks like they're struggling. Like, it just looks like it hurts, right?
Right.
I hate seeing that.
Yeah. And well, and frequently you see that goat milked out and the udder doesn't collapse very much.
Right. It's very mean.
Yeah, it's always concerning.
So they're not really getting that much more milk out of it. What you want is an udder that's socked up there tight so she can walk around of it, that disappears when you know she's done milking and you've milked out a pound in it. I mean a gallon and a half or something.
One of the things, Danielle, you raised an E in mammary. I mostly noted that most of the does do have an E in mammary. What I really like to be able to do is go and an E in general appearance. We mostly have E's in dairy character and E's in body capacity. But we still occasionally are struggling here or there with some general appearance issues. And so, you know, that's, you know, I'd like all four categories to be E's. And we can't yet say that everybody has an E in general appearance. We're getting closer, but
getting close, yeah.
But that's still an area where we're looking at what to do next and where to go. And
understandable. I mean, there's a reason you have goals, and obviously, probably that's one of those goals that if it's not a current goal, it'll be one that you'll put on paper, probably, you know, in a year or two to get that be part of the herd as well. I want to switch gears a little bit because we've talked a lot about the does, but obviously we need to talk about bucks for a bit. And so how do you guys choose your herd sires? I mean, I know you mentioned that when you buy a buck, you put in your request for color, but even in your own herd and keeping a homebred herd sire, what makes a buck that Lucky Star herd sire material for you?
Well, you know, we haven't kept a lot of our own bucks for use here, partly because of the, you know, narrow genetics we have. But when we do, and I think Sue Barker told us this, gave us this clue years ago, was take an outcross buck and breed him to your best doe and keep a son. And so we've done that a few times, and that has worked well for us.
Yeah, that has served us well to follow her advice.
We bring in the genetics, but you only really bring in half because you're not, you know, blowing up the gene pool with this outcross buck, you know, which, right, you know, expands your variability tremendously. You've brought it in, you know, you've used him on your best goat. Hopefully you've got a son that's going to reproduce, you know, that best goat frequently, and you can use him on other goats in your herd, but it doesn't blow up the gene pool into getting a lot of variability.
And then we work closely. I think neither of you are La Mancha breeders, but at least I don't think either of you have La Manchas. No. But
admirers, not breeders.
But we, if you look at our sires, you'll see we use a lot of Rockin' CB back in our herd that Cindy and I have over the years work together, and sometimes she'll bring in a sire and use it on a doe that's of a lot of interest to us, and then we'll bring that resulting son into our herd. And then we occasionally we're always looking at the internet, we're always looking at, you know, what's out there at shows. Lots of people send us pictures of show lineups of La Manchas. We talk to judges. I mean, we've kind of been at this a long time, so we know a few of those.
And they will tell us. I mean, if we say, you know, if we call them up and say, hey, what did this goat look like at the show you're at in Los Angeles? And they'll go, oh, you know, and they'll tell us. Right. And they'll say, well, you know, it was immature, or, oh, it was really nice, but it was second to this, but maybe won't be next year. We think, okay, well, that's, you know, information for us that we use in our evaluation process.
When we just collect all those notes and, you know, and then we call the breeder and talk to them. Nobody knows their goats better than the breeders themselves.
Right.
And so I find talking to the breeder and asking them what they think and following the breeder's advice, they will, especially if they're at all familiar with our animals, that has served us well. And then once you get that buck here, we kind of work, we have three strong dam lines that we use, even though they all go back to the same buck and doe. We've kind of have these sort of three with a slightly different look to them. We will breed a new buck to animals in each of those groups, and then look at the offspring and see if we've got, you know, are we getting a cross, or are we getting something's popping up that we don't like, you know, that something unfortunate happens. You know, if you get several jaw anomalies or Roman noses or bad pasterns or, you know, roach lawn, you know, you start to see some pattern. We might give up a buck sooner than 3 years, but we like to give a buck about 3 years so that we can see a second year mammary system out of them. Sometimes we end up letting a buck go just because we have a buyer who wants to throw a lot of money at us, and we are susceptible to that.
Who isn't, right?
You know, the price of hay and grain and we, you know, is sometimes we just do that. But mostly we work with the other La Mancha. I find the La Mancha community to be wonderfully supportive, kind people. I really feel like it takes a village, and if we work together, we make the breed better as a collective group of breeders. We have several huge competitors in La Mancha's in the Northwest. Of course, right now, the biggest of which is Rockin' CB. And she and I have been competing for, we figured it out, 30-some years now at almost every show we go to together. And we're best friends. And we long ago decided our friendship had to be more important than what happens in the show ring.
Yeah, but nobody else can win but either one of us.
No, not true.
I see no problem with any of that.
Yeah. But we...
You run across that a lot.
Yeah,
and we feel like... And we like to help out all the other La Mancha breeders. I have a thing that if you start dominating, one breed starts winning all the time in a local area, pretty soon, nobody else comes to shows in that breed. And I don't ever want to see that happen in La Mancha's. We have a lot, as I said, of beautiful La Mancha herds in the Northwest. All of them have won. I think we've had, since we won, there's been one, two, three, four other that I can rattle off the top of my head, La Mancha herds that have gone best dairy herd and show at Puyallup, our Washington State Fair, and you know, all different herds. So it's, I love to see that kind of competition in the breed and like to see the support for the breed. So
there's a lot of people that can take note from that kind of friendship where you can still compete against each other in the ring and walk away friends. And you see it all the time on Facebook. I'm sure you guys have, where somebody starts winning and all of a sudden the rumor mill starts and they're not respected as much, or, you know, people start getting mad at them, where really if everybody's just supporting each other, it should be fine at the end of the day. So it's really cool to hear that up in the Northwest, you guys really do adopt that.
I love the fellow La Mancha breeders up here, and we all do different, you know, we all do different things. Cindy and I don't always agree on what buck or what direction to go. And as she always likes to point out, she doesn't have a bunch of stupid rules to follow. She likes to, you know, give me a, you know, because a couple of her very beautiful animals are chamoisée. And I mean, she does her own thing. And is quite successful at doing her own thing. So because we share and work together, we have different criteria and different goals and objectives. The part of the objective of all this, last time I checked, was to have fun.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
And Don and I have fun doing it together.
Yeah.
We don't always agree. We always laugh that I'm a front end breeder. I really like nice front ends and nice chest, you know, dominant briskets, and heads, pretty heads. Don is a back end breeder. I mean, he wants, you know, as he said, I'm the one milking him every day. I want that udder to be and rear leg set and the rumps. Those have got all.
That's all I see. The heads in the I can't see that part.
Yeah. You're that's what you're staring at. I gotta say, Judy, I am also a front end guy. Do love a nice brisket extension, and I cannot lie. I do want to kind of go back here a second, because you were mentioning that you're working with three different lines. So when you're breeding animals, how do you line breed, and what is your normal inbreeding coefficient in your herd? And like, what's that percentage sweet spot for you guys? I know your numbers, people.
Okay. First off, when we say three different lines, two of them are 10 generations from the same, that first AI La Mancha.
Okay.
So even though at some point there were a pair of sisters that we kind of separated and carried on. So they're not really that different. The third one, we went out and got a doe and brought her home and bred her to the brother, to those two sisters. And so that doe line, that mitochondrial DNA, dam DNA, does not come down in that doe line, which gives us an opportunity. That tends to be where we might pull a buck from more often, but that line still goes back to the exact same AI doe and a spotlight sale buck, actually, the AI doe and a spotlight sale buck. And they, everybody in the herd descends from that. So it is sort of three lines. But when we go out and bring a buck in, we look for 4 to 8%, which is, I know, by a lot of people's standards, low. But in the La Mancha breed, the way we're currently calculating the inbreeding coefficient, I don't think goes back far enough and in depth far enough, because La Mancha breed actually has a pretty narrow, unless you're talking about graded up animals, it has a pretty narrow selection available. And so you have to be kind of careful. So we tend to look at what's way over there on the left-hand side of the, or on the right-hand side of the pedigree, rather, on the right-hand side, and see how many duplicates. We look at the inbreeding coefficient, and at, you know, we think the sweet spot is
six.
Yeah, kind of six is sort of, but we look and see who's at the top of the contribution on that. And if that top one or two animals are on our no-no list, we don't make that breeding. Because we find that when we get certain animals get too prominent in a cross we're going to make, we're going to get something we don't really want. And you're going to get stuff you don't really want anyway. So you want to, you know, we try to avoid doing that. And then other times it, you know, we have an old Vivian. We have, if she's at the top, we go, oh, okay, that's fine. She's an Ollie 94 doe. We'll take her.
Yeah. I would say so.
But she has a flaw. I mean, she has a Roman nose, and I Don doesn't mind it near as much as I do.
It's in the feeder. I don't see it.
It's in the feeder. You can see the dynamic how it goes around here. And it's so great. Anyway, she of course is just short of her 18th birthday, so she doesn't contribute.
Wow.
Although she has a sons that we use AI. She has granddaughters in the herd. And so we still get her genetics cobbled together. And
daughter, Johansson.
Yeah. I mean, we still have her daughter from her 12th kidding.
Oh my God. Talk about longevity. I mean, 18-year-old being productive and contributing. I mean, obviously, I know she's retired now, but still being there and still being alive at 18. That is just insane, really.
You know, and it's funny because we have another one over our quote retired pen, Zeray. She's a Z year, back the last Z time. And I mean, I was out there, I had to trim her feet a couple days ago, and I had to chase her down. I mean, she is so fast. And I mean, I don't know, was she what, 14, 15?
Yeah, 15, I think.
And I mean, and if you look at her, this is where I like to watch her walk around. She is level. She's got correct rear leg set. Her pasterns are great. Her front legs are straight. I mean, She's got ups. I mean, she's gorgeous, and she's at that age. She should be old and crippled, right? She's not. She is gorgeous, and that's the kind of goat that I want to see walking around the property, even at, you know, age 14.
When she's retired. Yeah. We have an A goat out there too.
Accolade.
Yeah. Accolade's the same way. And we just kind of, you know, and the one who kidded that had Revival, she's 10 years old this year, you know, and she had a 10 pound plus doe kid. Yeah. She looks great. I mean, she jumps on the milk stand and goes about her business. She does have a little temp. I mean, she's kind of one of our few exceptions to the Henry rule.
I have one of those that's 10 and still being very productive in our herd. And she's also, we call her the cat because she's ornery and she only comes up for affection when she wants to, and it's on her terms. So I appreciate those old gals that can still stand to the test of time as well.
Well, part of it we named her Drama when she was a kid. Yep. And she has spent 10 years living up to the name.
Yep, I understand that. Speaking of goats with names, and we mentioned him earlier before, and I want to ask you, because there's a rumor going, or there's a rumor that I've heard many of times, that that buck you had, plus B-Star, Little Orchards, BR, Pure Thrill, is it true you put him on milk test?
That whole thrill stuff is so stupid. I don't know where that got started. I don't know why it got started. But if you look at the picture of Thrill, which is posted on our website in the reference buck section, you can see what, you know, looks like a partial mammary system and a teat. And we take pictures of the animals in, especially the bucks. We tend to take pictures in the summertime because that's when they're least ruddy. And of course it shows because he's all trimmed up and clipped up. The picture kind of started the rumor, and everybody who writes to me, I try to set them straight that no, he has never been milked other than every fall, right before breeding season, we will milk him out. So, well, we did when he was alive, milk him out so that the udder didn't interfere with breeding. You know, and you don't want the heat of the milk to heat up the scrotum and end up killing semen.
Right.
So we would milk him out. We have had...
We never drank any of it, though.
Well, let me tell you, it's a disgusting smelling. Yeah, it was disgusting smelling stuff. It looked like milk that you get from a doe in dry lactation.
Yeah.
You know, and you sometimes, before they come into milk and whatever, you know, it's very oily looking rather than, and off color rather than milky looking. But we have had several other bucks who do that as well. And we are sort of superstitious. And if we look back over the milk records, we're sort of superstitious that there is a link between those precocious bucks and their milking daughters and the amount their daughters milk. So we're working with a buck right now who's precocious. His daughters have so far out milked their mothers.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's, I think Harvey Considine used to purport that there was a connection there, but he was never milked on other than once a year before a collection and fall breeding, and he was never on test.
I'm glad that rumor is false. I mean, I guess if he needed to, but the idea of, you know, the does come in, he comes in, he gets hooked up to the milk machine, he goes back, and like, it just
no he was always milked. Even when he was stripped out, it was always in the buck barn, nowhere near the milking does and nowhere near the milk machines or the milking parlor, the, you know. Well,
that's so funny and just great. And you know, who knows? Maybe somebody will do a study someday to see if there's any correlation between milky bucks and milky does.
But I do want to wrap up our interview with you, which has been amazing, by asking who, in all of the years, many years that you've been breeding La Manchas, who would you say is the animal that has come closest to checking all the boxes for you guys?
Oh, it's actually really easy for us. Her name is Rockin' CB RZ Haiku. It's not gorgeous. One of our does.
She's a gorgeous doe. One that have admired.
Got to see her. Well, we've seen her for many years, you know.
In person.
I got to look at her rear end in, you know, Best in Show 3 times this year, I think. Yeah. So, yeah.
Neither Don nor I can practically say her name without choking up. She came here last year or a year ago, because last spring she had kids from one of our bucks. So
she lived here for a month or so.
Yeah, she lived here for a while. And it was fabulous to see her and a bunch of her young milking daughters in our herd, because we've used a son of hers. We tell the story that Cindy mentioned to me, you know, I might have a buck for you. I was lamenting finding a buck, and I said, okay, well, I'll be over at the local show over there and we'll talk about it and kind of, you know, she was not real. I always should be suspicious when she does that, but not. Anyway, we're sitting, we always pen, so our trailers are side by side and our milking stands are in together, and she brings this doe out and puts it up on the milk stand. It's a yearling. And I sort of look at it, cock my head to both sides and look at it again. And I realized, I don't know who this doe is. And I said, who is this? And she said, this is the doe of the buck I thought you might be interested in. And I said, uh-huh. Okay, why don't we just go get him and put him in our trailer?
Easy peasy.
And Cindy laughs, and I said, she is amazing, Cindy. She is absolutely amazing. She's as close to perfect. She was one at that moment. And her son, Jax, or Zha Jing, came home with me that day and has made a real mark for us. Actually, the picture I sent you, John, that happens to be a Jack's daughter.
Really?
And kind of typical of his daughters. I mean, she's not the best one once we figured out who it was. But she, Haiku, is mine and Don's heartthrob goat. We just, she kind of ticks all the boxes for us. We have some daughters that look like they might, few that might tick some boxes from your granddaughters that might tick the boxes as well. But that doe is, she makes our eyes water every time we say her name.
I gotta say, that answer alone shows the kind of people that you are, and how close knit your guys's goat community is up in the Northwest. It's amazing to hear somebody who most people would have taken that moment right there to tote whatever goat they have, and rightfully so. But you guys are so thoughtful in thinking of what your type is and what animals you like that you went to your friend Cindy's herd with Haiku. And that's just really cool to hear. And I got to say, this interview has been nothing but a pleasure for me to just sit and listen to. You guys are just such a powerhouse of a couple.
Well, we've been married as long as we've had the goats.
our left turn in life was getting a goat. So
we often joke the reason we stayed married sometimes was because nobody wanted to be stuck with all the goats. We decided we better work it out. We've had a great life, and the goats have been a great part of it, and our children have been and still are a huge part of it. We have a 52-year-old son who lives up the road and he still milks here in exchange for boarding his horse. The other son brings the grandchildren here, disrupts our plans by them wanting other goats. I mean, and the friends, oh, the incredible people.
Judy and Don, thank you again. Where can we find more information about your goats? Where can we find you online for listeners who want to see more information on these animals or contact you?
We are at www.luckystarfarm.com. We're on Facebook at Lucky Star Farm. However, you have to be very careful because there are several other Lucky Star Farms on Facebook. So you got to find the one with Don in his Hawaiian shirt. And I think there's like 8 of our goats at the top in the banner.
Yeah, that's exactly which one it is. Yeah, that's how I found it because there are quite a few. I was surprised.
Yeah, there are quite a few.
We were first.
But there's nobody else registered with ADGA with exactly that. But at the website, and then, you know, anybody can send us PM messages and text us or write us emails. All the information's on the contact page on our website.
And our website is actually quite extensive if you go and drill down to various places in it.
Yes,
it is. It has pictures of, I mean, you can go back and drill back to those all those original goats from 45 years ago and look at them. And I mean, we always laugh. We kind of air our laundry out there. You know, I want to encourage people to do their own thing and understand that success can take time.
I would encourage everybody also to take a look at your guys's then and now page on the website, because it's really cool just to see where your herd started off from, which you still had very pretty goats back then, I must add. And as you go through, you can see pictures like that first place or best in show dairy herd from 2012. So it's really cool to kind of see how the herd has grown through the years.
Well, those original goats at the bottom of the page, where one of those is the very first Lucky Star doe is in that picture, that AI we made. But the 4 at the top of the page are all offspring of the 3 at the bottom.
That's amazing.
Descendants.
They're all, all those animals just keep going. I mean, we were very fortunate, or as Don always likes to say, we were very lucky in what we won and who we were mentored by and who, you know, who helped us along the way. It takes a village.
That's for sure. Well, again, thank you, Judy and Don Hoy from Lucky Star Farm, for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure. And for everybody else, we have social media where you can find us. Danielle, where can they find us on those various social medias and podcast apps?
You can find us on Facebook. We're Ringside and American Dairy Goat Podcast. You can find us on Instagram if you search Ringside_Goat_Podcast. And of course, you can find us on John's favorite platform, TikTok, if you search Ringside Podcast. You can also find us at DairyGoatPodcast.com or on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're on Apple or Spotify, be sure to give us a rating or review. We really appreciate it.
And thank you to The Gray Goat and Thistlemore Pottery for sponsoring this episode of Ringside. Everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Danielle.
We'll catch you on the next one. Ringside, an American Dairy Goat Podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.